Film, as a moving image medium, is more than an entertainment product. In many places around the globe, it's a lifesaver. Since 1999, the nonprofit humanitarian media organization FilmAid International has been overseeing an empowering movement to bring information, production tools, and content to some of the world's most desperate people, international refugees. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. FilmAid International was founded by film producer Carolyn Barron and works closely with the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees, as well as the International Rescue Committee and other service organizations. FilmAid is working in a variety of locales across the globe, and I'm delighted to have FilmAid International's Executive Director, Simon Goff, on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles. Great to be here.
It's great to be talking to you. I know you travel a lot, so thank you for taking the time. You're joining us by phone from FilmAid's offices in New York, and you have, I know, offices in a number of world cities. But I was thinking last week marked the World Refugee Day. I think it was on the 20th of June, and so it's timely that we talk about your organization and its mission. What was the genesis of FilmAid International?
Yes, the genesis, as you mentioned before, Carolyn Barron, a New York-based film producer, started the organization in 1999. And this stemmed from a report that she heard about the ongoing crisis in the Balkans, in particular in Kosovo. And on this report, she had heard that, in fact, you know, food and shelter were being provided by the United Nations and other agencies. However, one of the biggest issues was the psychological impact of losing your home and losing your possessions, and potentially also losing loved ones through the conflict. And that was where she came up with the idea that, in fact, film can be a really powerful tool to not just inform and educate, but also to provide that psychological relief. So in 1999, she got together a group of friends to support the origins of the organization, and they, within a couple of weeks, they were in Kosovo and in Macedonian refugee camps actually showing films.
Extraordinary. I'm also thinking, as you describe kind of those early reports she was hearing from Kosovo, where the shelter and immediate needs might have been provided for, but, you know, film also has the ability to rebuild communities, and the communal watching experience is something that's rather powerful, I would gather, in a place that's been broken apart by war.
Absolutely. So just from, we didn't expect, we didn't even know how many people would come, and initially we were looking at films just for children. And when we arrived, and you know, we were using big screens and obviously projectors, and we got there, and not just the kids were coming, the whole community was coming, and we had hundreds, sometimes thousands, coming for these screenings. And as you said, that collective community environment of coming together when you've lost so much was incredibly empowering and engaging.
And you're working mainly in refugee camps around the world?
Our work primarily is in refugee camps. However, we have started to work in informal settlements in urban areas. So, for example, in slum areas where poverty is rife and also access to information and access to media is limited.
Yeah, I think one of the fascinating things as part of your mission is that not only collecting these people together for these communal screenings, but then once you have those people together, those thousands watching a big screen, you're producing or helping to produce content that is really key to communicating with them about their needs and what they need to be doing in the camps.
Yeah, and that was one of the most amazing things, was that we arrived and we were showing these films for psychological relief, but then we realized that this was actually a mechanism to educate as well. So we very quickly evolved into developing content and films about public health. So it might be about maternal health or cholera prevention or HIV/AIDS, as well as security and protection issues to ensure that those communities stay safe, because their structure and the structure of communicating with that audience had gone. There was no television. There was no other means to disseminate this information.
It almost seems like you also run what for lack of a better word, apprenticeship programs where you're using local refugees and teaching them the means of producing their own content.
Absolutely. And as a part of when we started to look at the content we wanted to produce, we felt that as an organization, it was incredibly important that it wasn't us coming from the U.S. and saying, you know, we're going to make this content for you. Hmm. It was more like we want to make this content with you. And we want to give you the tools, and we want to empower you to design the messages on the issues that are relevant to your community. So that participatory approach has always been at the core of what we do.
You have some staggering statistics that there are over 43 million refugees currently in bona fide refugee camps around the world, and that the average refugee stay is something like 17 years in a camp. And I would imagine that, you know, within these camps, rudimentary economies build up, and I'm wondering if these programs where you're teaching people the skills to make this content also make them in some ways more marketable in whatever economy that exists in the place they are.
Absolutely, and not just that, but also transition either to being repatriated to their homes or whether it's being resettled. You know, obviously at the core of what we do is this skills learning, and it's not just about filmmaking skills, but for example, we now work with the refugee communities to actually do the screenings and the workshop screenings. So we teach them to facilitate workshop sessions with the community around these really important issues. And so the leadership skills they're taking, you know, from this training are useful in their everyday lives, but as they transition, it gives them an incredible basis to go on and work in not just the media industry, but also other forms of the economy.
I would think it's incredibly empowering to someone who's been displaced and lost, in some cases, everything, that, you know, they're not just one in a million in these crowds, but that they have skills and that they're gaining confidence in themselves. Do they ever take these? I know you produce a lot of what I would call PSAs or public service announcements about sanitation and health issues and just communication within the camps, but do they take these skills also and make maybe personal films that are kind of diaries of their lives or are narrative films the way we would think of filmmaking in this country?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's something that we want to do. Everybody has a story to tell, and I think that narrative, particularly when you come from an environment where you might not have been able to have an avenue to tell your story. So we do also produce short dramas that communities are involved in. One I'm going to talk to now is a very interesting program about gender-based violence. And particular rape. And this wasn't with a refugee community. This was with a community in the Kibera slum of Nairobi, an area that is particularly impacted by this. And in the process of making the media, we were working with women who have been impacted by that issue. And they were involved in producing the script and telling the stories that formed part of a feature-length film that we produced a couple of years ago called Sita Kimya. And that was an amazing process of empowerment for women who have been impacted by rape and sexual violence, for their stories to be told and to become the cornerstone of a campaign that continues to roll out across Kenya to give women a voice who have never had that.
I imagine because you're working in refugee camps, you're working in some of the toughest places in the world. Are some tougher than others?
It is a fluid environment and generally driven by what is going on with the local political situation. So, for example, at the moment in the Dadaab refugee camp in northern Kenya, it is being impacted by the ongoing issues within Somalia. So security is often a big issue that we have. And in the past, for example, when there was a famine in Somalia a couple of years ago, these create very challenging environments for us to work within. But we obviously work very closely with the refugee communities and continue to work throughout these challenging times.
Do you ever work in a situation where the local government is resisting some of your efforts?
No, we work very closely with local government partners because of our work with the United Nations and other large agencies. It's very important that we are communicating, in the case of Kenya, very closely with the government of Kenya to ensure that we are supporting the refugee communities with the information they need in the environment that they're living within.
I love one of your statements on your website, projecting hope. I love that imagery. I'm sure a lot of listeners would like to get involved in some meager way, and maybe not so meager ways, but how do people get involved with FilmAid, both personally as well as financial support?
Well, there's a couple of ways. Obviously, organizations like ours survive on the incredibly kind support that is given to us by our donors, and that's how we can continue to do our work in the field. But there is also another way that filmmakers can get involved. We have been developing what we call a video teaching artists program, and this allows opportunity for trained filmmakers and producers to travel to the camps and take part in the teaching process and the skills like development process with the refugees. So those are the two sort of main ways. But, you know, content is at the core of everything that we do. And so we're always very interested to hear from people's ideas on how do you communicate about these issues and what can you do to use your creativity to have an impact on people's lives around the world.
When I see people who work in these kinds of organizations, I'm almost positive you don't see this as just a job, that it's a bit of a mission in life. And I'm curious, you know, how you found yourself in this line of work and where your passion comes from.
Well, yeah, my background, it comes from content creation and production. I started my career with MTV, but always working within the social responsibility department of MTV internationally. One of the major causes I've worked on through my career was the issue of human trafficking. And with MTV, I developed a nonprofit organization called MTV Exit Foundation. And through that organization, we would produce educational documentaries, dramas, public service announcements, music videos, as well as using music on the ground. So we would produce concerts in areas where people are at risk of being trafficked. So I always came to this, call it a movement. It was about social injustice and the fact that we can use these tools that we have at our disposal. We can use creativity, we can use film, we can use music to educate and make the world a better place.
And also teach others how to do that as well. I love to hear that the technology and filmmaking skills we frankly take for granted in this country, largely for entertaining ourselves, are being put to such good and life-sustaining uses around the globe. I want to thank you, Simon, for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much, Charles.
I've been discussing the mission and programs of the nonprofit humanitarian media organization, FilmAid International, with FilmAid's executive director, Simon Goff. If you'd like to learn more about the work of FilmAid International, or more importantly, support their efforts with a donation, log on to filmaid.org. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.